Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing with the sixth canto, chapter 4, entitled the Hangso Guyu Prayers, text number 25. Deho Savo Cha Manavo Bhuta Matram Atmanam Anyam Cha Viduhu Parang Yat Sarvam Puman Veda Gunangs Cha Taj Gyo Na Veda Sarva Gyam Anantam Ide Deho Svaksha Manavo Bhuta Matram Atmanamanyam Javeduk Parangyat Sarvang Puman Veda Gunangs Chatajgyo Naveda Sarvagyam Anantamide Deho Savoksha Manavo Bhuta Matram Atmanam manyam cha vidu paramyat. Sarvang puman veda gunangs chatajyo. Na veda sarvagyam anantamide. Deho Savo Manavo Bhuta Matram Atmana Manyam Cha Vidu Parangyat Sarvang Puman Veda Gunang Sajag Chyo Naveda Sarvang Gyam Anantam Ide Deho Svaksha Manavo Tamatam Atmana Manyam Chavidu Parangyat Sarvam Puman Veda Gunang Satajgyo Naveda Sarvagyam Anantamide Deho Savoksha Manavo Bhuta Matram Namanyam Javidu Parangyat Sarvam Puman Veda Gunam Satajgyo Naveda Sarvagyam Anantamide Matajis? Deho Savoksha Manavo Bhuta Matram Atmana Manyam Chavidu Parangyat Sarvang Puman Veda Gunang Satajgyo Naveda Sarvagyam Anantamide Deho Savoksha Manavo Bhuta Matram Atmana Manyam Chavidu Parangyad Sarvang Puman Veda Gunang Satajgyo Aveda sarvagyam anantamide. Eho savoksha manavo bhutamatam. Atmana manyam chaviduk parangyat. Sarvang puman veda gunang satajgyo. Naveda sarvagyam anantamide. Deha. This body, asavaha, the life airs, akshaha, the different senses, manavaha, the mind, understanding, intellect, and ego, bhutamatram, the five gross material elements, and the sense objects. Form, taste, sound, and so on. Atmanam, themselves. Anyam, any other. Cha, and. Viduhu, no. Param, beyond. Yat, that which. Sarvam, everything. Puman, the living being. Veda, known, I'm sorry, knows, gunan, the qualities of the material nature, cha, and tatgya, knowing those things, na, not, Veda, knows, sarvagyam, unto the omniscient, anantam, the unlimited. Ede, I offer my respectful obeisances. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Because they are only matter, the body, the life airs, the external and internal senses, the five gross elements, and the subtle sense objects, form, taste, smell, sound, and touch, cannot know their own nature. The nature of the other senses, or the nature of their controllers, but the living being, being of his spiritual nature, can know his body, the life airs, the senses, the elements, and the sense objects. And he can also know the three qualities that form their roots. Nevertheless, although the living being is completely aware of them, he is unable to see the Supreme Being, who is omniscient and unlimited. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Purport. Material scientists can make an analytical study of the physical elements, the body, the senses, the sense objects, and even the air that controls the vital force. But still, they cannot understand that above all these is the real spirit soul. In other words, the living entity, because of his being a spirit soul, can understand all the material objects, or, when self-realized, he can understand the Paramatma, upon whom the yogis meditate. Nevertheless, the living being, even if advanced, cannot understand the Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, for he is Ananta, unlimited, in all six opulences. Omigana timaranda siyaganandana shalakaya chakshur umilitangena tasmai shri gurave namaha namo vishnupadaya krishna prasai bhutale shrimate paladananda swami tone namo vishnupadaya krishna prasai bhutale shrimate bhaktivedanta swami tone namaste sarasvati deve gaurvani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschati adesha charine. So this verse here, it focuses on what I notice is three main things. So the first thing it mentions is talking about these elements of the material manifestation. It's talking about the body. It's talking about the life airs, the senses, the sense objects. Yet all these things, because they're inert, because they're material in nature, they do not have the power of comprehension, of understanding themselves. Because by nature they're inert. They have no capability independent of themselves to do anything. The material nature requires the assistance, the energy of something else in order to operate. So as we know, what actually manifests and makes all this material nature act is the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Before this material nature became activated, it's called the Pradhan. The Pradhan is the sum total of the unmanifest or inert material elements. And that's also what's being referred to here in this verse as the three qualities that form their roots. The roots of everything in this material universe are the three modes of material nature. Sattva-gun, Rajagun, Tamagun, or the mode of goodness, mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. And when they're in their inert state, in the Pradhan, they're lying there dormant. But as soon as the glance, the transcendental glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead passes over them, they become excited into action and they immediately start competing for dominance. Because that's the nature of the material world. Material energy means competition. It means struggle for existence. And so even these three modes of material nature, they're struggling for dominance within this material world. And so this is very important to understand about the inert nature of this material energy. Because this body that we're temporarily inhabiting is also made of the material energy. Ultimately made up of the constituents of these three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. And so it's really rather ignorant of people to claim that I am this material body, things that this material body produces are mine, things related to this material body are my bodily extensions. Because what is this material body? It's simply a corpse that's flapping around for a little bit of time. If you take the spirit soul out, what do you have? You have a corpse. And this is one aspect that yoga is meant to help us realize. It's meant to help us realize that we are a spiritual living entity separate from this dead lump of matter. And you can factually experience this. You can factually experience being separate from your body and feeling how this body is very heavy and it has a certain weight and requires a great deal of energy just to move it around. And then the other aspect of yoga is to pacify the mind. By yoga, I'm referring to what's commonly thought of as Ashtanga Yoga or Hatha Yoga, dealing with asanas, pranayama, dharana, yam, niyam. All these eight different angas or limbs of the mystic yoga process, ultimately culminating in realization of the Paramatma. So in this verse it mentions also that yes, we can actually understand the Paramatma. Prabhupada makes it clear in the purport. Or when self-realized, he can understand the Paramatma upon whom the yogis meditate. So the Paramatma is the localized representative of the Supreme Absolute Truth within the hearts of all living entities. One way I've seen it described before by Prabhupada about understanding the Paramatma is that it's one Paramatma. And this one Paramatma is shining down equally within the hearts of all living entities. It's not that Paramatma is fractured and there's hundreds of millions of unlimited individual forms of Paramatma. No, there's only one Paramatma. So just as the sun is shining down on everyone's head, in the same way the Paramatma is shining within the hearts of all living entities. But the important point that's being made here is that even though we may be able to understand the Paramatma, we still cannot know the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He's unlimited. It's impossible to wrap our puny consciousness around that which is unlimited. Because He has unlimited opulences, He has unlimited wealth, unlimited fame, unlimited strength, unlimited renunciation, unlimited beauty, and unlimited knowledge. So how can we possibly even comprehend this? I mean, scientists, they're trying to comprehend these gross material elements. They're trying to get knowledge of just these material elements. And yet it's full of so many errors. So much speculation, so much guessing. And then when their speculation is proven false, they're not really so embarrassed about it. Rather, with great enthusiasm, they see, oh, just see, this shows how the scientific process really works. Even though all that's happening is just their own foolishness is being exposed. And they're glorifying this. Oh, look how foolish we are. Just see, this really works. This process of mental speculation. But one important point is that only the bhakta, only the devotee can actually know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna says in the Gita that only through this process of bhakti yoga, of devoting ourselves with love and affection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will we then get any understanding about His real nature. Because by His mercy, He will allow us to understand Him. It's not that by some dry analytical approach, we can dissect the Supreme Personality of Godhead and come to understand every intimate aspect of Him by our own power of speculation. That's not possible because He's unlimited, as mentioned here in this text. So Lord Anantadev, He's at the bottom of the universe, and He has unlimited hoods, unlimited heads, and with His unlimited mouths, from the beginning of creation of this universe, He's been extolling the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And He still hasn't reached the end of this. And He'll be glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead with His unlimited mouths all the way through until the end of the universe. And He still won't even have touched a fraction of His glories. I mean, how can we comprehend this? How can we possibly understand? I mean, even Anantadev, who's an expansion of an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even He is so enormous, so gigantic, that He doesn't even know where the universes are resting upon His head. Because in the Karna Ocean, Ananta is both within the Karna Ocean and within the Garbhadak Ocean. In the Karna Ocean, He's the resting place of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is lying upon His coils. And upon all of His hoods, He's holding all of the unlimited universes that are coming out from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu when Mahavishnu breathes. And it's explained that these universes are so insignificant that He doesn't even know where on His head they're resting. How can we understand this? I have even a little tiny pebble on my head and I know where it is. But yet, Lord Anantadev has entire universes, unlimited universes, and the universe itself is unlimitedly large. So many planets, so many stars, so many living entities, and he doesn't even know where it is on his head. But by devoting ourselves to Krishna with love and devotion, he will impart this knowledge to us through the agency of the spiritual master. All this knowledge will be revealed within our heart. And then we can have perfect understanding because that understanding is given to us. Just like Arjuna, when Arjuna was on the battlefield, he requested to see Krishna's universal form. But he couldn't understand, he couldn't see or comprehend this universal form without Krishna's help. So Krishna gave him the eyes to be able to see this universal form. But another important point is that devotees, they're not interested in understanding Krishna in his absolute unlimited nature. Devotees are interested in understanding Krishna according to the limited conception provided by Yogamaya. So even when Arjuna was witnessing this terrible, gruesome form of Krishna, how he pervades this world, how he's simultaneously creating, maintaining, and destroying this material universe, at the end of it, Arjuna, ultimately, he said, you know, after seeing this universal form, which I've never seen before, I'm gladdened, but at the same time, my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please bestow your grace upon me and reveal your form as the personality of Godhead, O Lord of Lords, O abode of the universe. So Arjuna, he's not interested in understanding about this unlimited nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What his heart desires is to see him in his very lovable two-handed form. This form is much more satisfying to the heart. And then even Mother Yashoda, as illustrated in that picture there on the back by the Mardangas, Mother Yashoda, she's looking into the mouth of baby Krishna. Because what happened is Krishna's brother Balaram and all his little cowherd friends, they were accusing him, saying, oh, Mother Yashoda, your little son Krishna, he's been eating dirt. And Krishna's saying, no, no, I never ate dirt. All my friends, they're lying on me. They're not telling the truth. And his friends are saying, no, 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 we saw him, he was eating dirt. So Mother Yashoda says, okay, if you've been eating dirt, I'm not saying you have or haven't, but if you have been eating dirt, then just open your mouth and then everyone will see. So what happens? Krishna opens his mouth and Mother Yashoda sees all the dirt in the whole universe. She's seen the whole universe, she's seen all the planets, she's seen this earth planet, she's seeing herself looking in Krishna's mouth, and she becomes completely bewildered. This is from the 8th chapter in the Krishna book. So she's thinking, it may be cosmic mystic power attained by my child, and therefore I'm perplexed by such visions within his mouth. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the expression of consciousness, mind, work, and philosophical speculation, and whose different energies produce everything manifested and unmanifested. Under his energy, bodily self and bodily possessions are conceived. She then said, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him under whose illusory energy I am thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband, Krishna is my son, and that all the properties of Nanda Maharaj belong to me, and that all the cowherd men and women are my subjects. All this misconception is due to the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. So let me pray to him that he may protect me always. And then it's explained that when Krishna saw Mother Yashoda in this very philosophical mood, which was getting in the way of her motherly relationship with him. Then he had Yogamaya cover her again, cover her consciousness with the veil of devotional feelings, with this parental feelings. Because when devotees are wrapped up in this very dry philosophical mode of trying to understand Krishna, it hampers, it gets in the way of the free loving exchange of these different rasas. So it's important though to understand that when we're developing our sambandha, our relationship with Krishna, it is good to study. It is good to have this philosophical outlook, to try to philosophically understand Krishna. It's encouraged. Because during this process, when we're establishing our relationship with Krishna, coming to understand sambandha jnana, that's in the process of Adi Sadhana Bhakti. And so it's very, very important that we try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, understand this material energy, why we don't want to be associated with this material energy, and why we want to devote our life to Krishna. And then gradually, over the course of time, and having a great degree of patience, because in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we don't really have true loving feeling for Krishna. And so we have to imitate. We have to go through the motions until this real love spontaneously manifests within our heart. And then spontaneously, it's not some artificial endeavor. Spontaneously, we'll start loving and serving Krishna. And then at that point, when we're spontaneously loving Krishna, then trying to philosophically and very dryly break Krishna apart and understand all his different aspects, it gets in the way, it hinders these loving spiritual reciprocations with Krishna. But it's important to understand that this is a natural progression. It's not something to be forced or to try to artificially jump to. Oh, you know, I'm Mother Yashoda now, or I'm Nanda Baba. No, you can't do that. Because there's only one Mother Yashoda, there's only one Nanda Maharaj, there's only one Srimati Radharani, there's only one Lalita Sakhi, there's only one Vishakha Sakhi. We can't, you know, knock someone off, you know, whack their knees and take their position. You know, so the process is to follow in the footsteps and have a mood, follow in the mood of these great transcendental personalities. Just like, for instance, even Putana. Putana was following in the mood of Mother Yashoda by offering her breast for Krishna to suck. That doesn't mean that she became Mother Yashoda in the spiritual world. No, she, because of Krishna's unlimited mercy, she was actually granted the position of a nurse in the spiritual world, in Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan. So being a nurse is in the same mood as Mother Yashoda. It's still in this parental relationship, but it's not, you know, hijacking the position and taking over, and, you know, it's not like that. And it's also important to really understand that this is a natural progression. As we develop and progress in Krishna consciousness, naturally these things will be revealed to us. It's not that if we don't understand what our eternal swarup is, then we can't really practice Krishna consciousness. No, that's not important. Prabhupada said that even if at the time of death you don't understand your eternal swarup, your eternal position with Krishna, that's not important. That doesn't really matter. Because if we really are that purified, to be qualified to understand that. Then at time of death, when we leave this material body and remain in our spiritual body only, then all that knowledge will be revealed to us. We never have to worry about being at loss for something, missing out on something. What's more important is that we engage practically, that we use our hands, we use these senses, we use these limbs, we use them in Krishna's service, and we engage for His pleasure under the instructions of our authorities. Because even in the spiritual world, it's not that, oh, well, I'm transcendental, I'm liberated now, therefore I have no authority. No, in the spiritual world, the authority is even more strict than here in the material world. You know, Srimati Radharani, she has those that are directly under her, and then those sakis have their subordinates, their mandris. Those mandris have their subordinates, their subgroups. With the cowherd boys, it's the same thing. There's Krishna's main group of cowherd boys, and then within that main group, they have subgroups, and those subgroups have their subgroups. It's a very strict hierarchical system. But at the same time, it's a very blissful system. And in this way, everything works very orderly, all for the supreme pleasure of Krishna. So everything is coordinated. So all the activities harmonize. So it's not just chaos in the spiritual world. Can you imagine if everyone in the spiritual world was independently trying to speculate his own thing, what he thinks that Krishna wants? You know, it's like a mundane example here in the material world. If the spiritual master asks for a glass of water, and then the disciple thinks, oh, I'll get something even nicer, I'll bring him some milk. And then the milk is brought, and the spiritual master says, where's my water? I wanted water. You know, but because of the speculation of the disciple, the spiritual master wasn't pleased because he really needed some water. So in the same way, the things that Sri Sri Radhakrishna really want to fulfill their desire is being passed down through this chain of authority. And in this way, all the different needs, all the different aspects are very tastefully taken care of and arranged with perfect harmony and with perfection in its beauty and its appearance and expression and experience. Everything is perfect about it. So I think I'll end there if there's any comments or questions.
Maharaj said that Radharani and Nand Maharaj, Yashoda are one. So there is any difference in Golok and here in material world?
No, because pure devotees like that, they can actually have unlimited expansions. They can be simultaneously in the spiritual world and in the material world at the same time. Is that okay?
Thank you for an interesting class. I have one question about Putana. You said she became a nurse in the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. But in the spiritual world, there's no disease, old age, or death. So why would they need a nurse?
No, it's not a nurse like a hospital nurse. Nowadays, in modern times, most people don't know the other type of nurse. Because previously, baby formula didn't exist. Powdered milk. That didn't exist. And so what would happen is they had what's called wet nurses. And so it would be some Mataji, some mother, who would nurse the child with her own breast milk. That's why it's also called nursing the child. It's not that the child is in danger or, you know, bodily pain, and therefore they're being nursed. Is that okay? Okay. Ganesh Prabhu.
I would just like to give a final reminder that this evening at 6 p.m., the devotees who want to taste the Maha Ecstasy of the month, please come around at 6 p.m. so they can join in the Maha Harinam in downtown Los Angeles, the Art Walk.
Well, actually, shouldn't they come earlier so you can leave by 6 p.m.? Come at 5:30 and then leave by 6?
6 p.m. is fine. Be here at 6 p.m. And we'll be distributing transcendental literatures and prasadam cookies. So please come. Last time there was nearly 50 devotees that came. So we're hoping for a big turnout and we're prepared for it. So please don't miss out on this chance to turn your jnana into vijnana. Hari Bol.
Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.